This is my second last sermon, so I've been choosing topics that I'm very, very passionate about, like the little oaks. But I'm going to start by saying, has anybody else been struggling to keep their grass under control? It's just me. Rain and warmth, abundance of green. Well, we're going to talk about that energy that makes me try and mow whenever it's not raining in a much more spiritual way, that lifeblood, that virility, that new life that is almost like a river that carries us. And so that's what we're going to talk about. And I'm going to start by telling you a little story I heard from this lady called Mary about Art. A few of you know Art. I was supposed to do his memorial just at the start of coronavirus time. And I gathered stories, and Mary told me this wonderful story. So Art and Mary worked on a telecommunications company in San Francisco. And they used to go to lunch, and they'd go to David White poetry readings. They do all sorts of interesting things for lunch. They were good friends. And this day, Art said, "Mary, I want to skip to lunch." This is a wonderful idea because I don't know Art in this way. I think of him as an old man who was quite sensible and very open-hearted. So they skipped all the way to lunch. And Mary said, "Art, we just skipped all the way to lunch. What do you think that means about this new relationship of yours?" And Art, I think he said, "Oh, I don't know." And I wanted to bring that in as that beautiful example as how we as adult selves can feel this incredible movement and new life. And it often comes in the form of love. Beltane is associated with sexual union between the masculine and the feminine, and new life. And I want to say that that force that in small children makes them skip for everything, ice cream, whatever, is there in us as adults too. And that energy of excitement and movement, that little piece of wildness that makes us skip in the middle of San Francisco City, is a vitality of God that often doesn't get a look in mainstream religion. And the other thing I need to tell you is that today I'm going to be talking primarily as an interfaith minister, right? I often use the Christian tradition, sometimes I'll borrow other ones, but today I'm really talking of a blending of the different traditions. On Friday, I did an amazing concert. Many of you tuned in. Thank you for joining that concert with a woman called Alana Lewandowski. And we did this to celebrate Beltane. She was up in Manitoba. And she told so many great stories. But the one I want to focus on today was about a fox lady. Now, being a Scottish Celt, I knew where this story was going right from the time she started it. And it's about this young man who stumbles across this house in the forest. And there's a smell of cooking and all these beautiful things. And he's drawn to the light and the smell, and he sees this gorgeous, beautiful woman. And he woos her, and they start to date, and he moves in. But there's a thing about her, which is that she has a fox skin hanging in the house. And he doesn't like the smell of it. It's not pleasing to his senses. It's not part of his way of doing things to have the skin of an animal just hanging out in the living room. And he complains about it a lot, and eventually he asks her to put it outside. And she agrees. And that night, when she puts it outside, she leaves him. She never comes back. Now, me listening to this as a Scot knows that she is a shapeshifter. And the reason she has that skin is because she's part fox and part human. And there's many, many stories of men that fall in love, usually with silkies, the seal people, and how the man tries to get the cloak and stop her being wild. And that is the underpinning thing I want to talk to us about today, which is Are we inviting in the wilderness of Beltane, the green man? Are we just looking at the forest in a kind of thinking of it as a park? Or are we actually inviting that virility, that energy that made art skip to lunch? That force, that co-creation that Mia was singing about so beautifully, very powerful, and to be honest, scary face of God. The traditional religion often talks about fearing God, and I just, that makes no sense to me. That makes no sense to me at all. Why would you fear a loving power that made you, in which you have your being? But there is an aspect of the wild face of God, the green man, the green woman, the aspect of the Christ consciousness that asks me to constantly grow and be more. And I'm not frightened of any of those things, but I am sometimes frightened about what they will ask of me. So I'm going to talk about the mountain lion and the bear and all this wilderness that lives around me, and how I use that to make sure I'm not too comfortable, not too human, not too small in the way that I'm co-creating. And especially in religious thinking, I think it's really, really important. There's a vitality of the sacred held in wilderness that most of our lives are quite remote from these days. And Beltane reminds us of this. Don't let your faith be tame, and don't let it tame you. Jesus didn't come here to be nice. There's that wonderful poem that I want to share a big chunk of with you. So this is called How to Be a Good Ancestor by Sophia Rosenberg. And there is an amazing version of a signer doing a signed version of this poem, which is just profoundly beautiful. Be still and listen. Slip through the needle eye of silence and leave behind your preference for red wine, your talent for word games, your grandfather's watch, your hair, your skin, your teeth. Enter naked as bones. Ask the furred, the feathered, the finned, how to ford the river, how to scale the rock cliff, how to spin your flax to gold. Feel the floor beneath your absence, the wide planks of the old house that were once proud firs breathing out cool fog, and touch the skies those trees held up. Stand before gods that are strangers, whose language is harsh in your ears, and do not flinch. Stand before gods that are strangers, whose language is harsh in your ears, and do not flinch. And then this is another reading by Terry Tempest Williams. It's a bit of a jump, but I'm hoping you'll put the two together. A good friend of mine said, "You are married to sorrow." And I looked at him and I said, "I am not married to sorrow. I just choose not to look away." And I think there is a deep beauty in not averting our gaze. No matter how hard it is, no matter how heartbreaking it is, it's about presence. It's about bearing witness. I used to think bearing witness was a passive act, and I don't believe that anymore. I think that when we are present, when we bear witness, when we do not avert our gaze, something is revealed. The very marrow of life. And we change. A transformation occurs. Our consciousness shifts. I'm going to read that last bit again. I used to think that bearing witness was a passive act. I don't believe that anymore. I think that when we are present, when we bear witness, when we do not divert our gaze, something is revealed. The very marrow of life. we change. A transformation occurs, our consciousness shifts. They are the words of Terry Tempest Williams. So I think what I'm getting at is that there's a fierce and a fearlessness of life. And that both Christianity and A Course in Miracles talk about a lot. But Beltane has that, the wildness of the green man and the green woman who in the Scottish 1st of May are naked, painted green, real people dressing up as or painted up as the green man. That's pretty fierce and fearless to do that in those temperatures, in that public arena. The green man and the creatures teach us not to avert our eyes. And I remember that when I was struggling the most in my life, it was only people who did not avert their eyes who were able to really hold me. People who just saw me and saw my strength and saw the potential for healing, saw all of it in a disaster zone. There was a wonderful quote from Christine Felter's Painter. She's the Abbey of the Arts that Pam and I talk about so much. And she has a number of poems she's written for the pandemic. And this one, this next line comes from a poem called In Dark Times. Do not let your handful of light sting the eyes of those who have bathed in darkness. There's a courage and a wildness of letting the world be very, very raw that is so spiritually important and gets tamed in the churches with nice language. This is Psalm 84. Blessed are they who put their strength in you, who choose to share the joy and the sorrow of the world. They do not give way to fear or doubt. They are quickened by divine light and power, and they dwell within the peace of the Most High. They go from strength to strength and live with integrity. So what I'm saying is to look at those familiar words about peace and sorrow and joy and humanity, but to hold them close so that you can really feel all of it. And it's really rather intense and uncomfortable. But that, I think, is what the spiritual path asks us to do, to be very emotionally awake and very compassionate for others. Not sympathetic, compassionate. Empathy, not sympathy. The book that Pam has chosen for us, The Wisdom Jesus, that David was talking about earlier, begins, page one, this way. So are you sitting uncomfortably? Well then, let me begin. This is from the Gospel of Thomas. If you are searching, you must not stop until you find. When you find, however, you will become troubled. Your confusion will give way to wonder. In wonder, you will reign over all things. Your sovereignty will be your rest. So my premise today is that we need to let the wildness come in. And that means prioritizing things that are not comfort. And where I'm going to go here is with Peace Pilgrim. So we talked about Peace Pilgrim in the concert. That's part of why she came out. But she also, I really heard her when David was sharing the Daily Word earlier. Because we think of peace as this kind of crocheted, lovely absence of noise, gentle thing, when actually peace is a very vibrant, excitable, you know, anybody that works with children, like I have a a ministry with children that they're completely out of control, and it's so much harder than you adults. Peace is bigger than we are. It's a life force that when we tap into that, it changes us, and it destroys everything that we were doing. It makes us find new, bigger, and better ways. It is not comfortable. And Peace Pilgrim, she was amazing. She walked for like 20 years across North America, promoting inner peace and world peace. And her wisdom was so in alignment with unity. Here's a few of the things that she said. In my work, I have chosen a positive approach. I never think of myself as protesting against something, but rather witnessing for harmonious living. Those who witness for present solutions. She also said, the most important part of prayer is what we feel, not what we say. We spend a great deal of time telling God what we should think should be done, and not enough time waiting in stillness for God to tell us what to do. She goes on, I'm a deeply religious person, but I follow the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. People replace the spirit of the law with the letter, and then the law and truth become distorted into falsehood. And my favorite quote, many people professed Christianity, very few live it. So one of the things I want to tell you about her was that she gave up her name, she gave up everything, all her possessions, and she would walk until given shelter and fast until offered food. And she had a big sign on her back that said, Peace Pilgrim, walking for peace. And in the early days, nobody knew who she was. Now, she chose to do this after being on a 40-day fast and realized that she would survive doing this. But I think we really need to remember that she endured quite a lot of hardship. Like, there's one story of her sheltering under a bridge in a snowstorm, shivering. And she would say, here, let me get this quote for you. I've slept on the grass beside the road and walked all night to keep warm. If you're concerned enough about what you're doing, you don't mind any of these so-called hardships. And I am very concerned about peace. If food was offered, I don't ever ask. I would receive it. Even before people knew me, I never had to skip more than 3 or 4 meals. Now remember, she means 3 or 4 meals in a row. And the reason she did this was, I cannot accept more than I need when others have less. She did not prioritize comfort. She had this guiding principle that was so alive in her, that she lived a very untamed, wild faith and touched the lives of thousands and thousands of people. Yesterday, or the day before in the concert, I asked if anybody had met her, and Pam had met her, and Caroline Wallflower had met her. You know, but she touched the lives of many, many people. So I'm bringing Peace Pilgrim in because I want to say that there's a radical wildness and prioritizing of things that are not comfort that allowed her to be such a strong spiritual presence. And Beltane, for me, really brings that up. I'm going to go back to the story about the fox skin and the lady and go back to that story and summarize that a little bit. There's a vitality, a lifeblood, that draws us towards things, like the man who was drawn towards the smell of the cooking in the garden and this mysterious house in the forest. Often, in our stories, we talk about this as love, or love at first sight. But perhaps it's more than just that. It's also a deep instinct or knowing. I'm going to ask us to listen to that non-verbal voice that stirs within us. I've heard that in relationships we fall in love with the things about the other that we want to grow in ourselves. But I think this is also what we do with the spiritual stuff that is so fascinating to us, like me with my love of the trees, the oak trees, and the monastic traditions, is I really long for and need that peace. I'm so out in the world, I'm so busy, that my heart longing is taking me towards spiritual practices that will bring me more into harmony and balance. Do we listen to our heart stirrings? Let's pay attention. Let's wake up to that stuff. Second thing that jumps out to me from the story is, do we try and tame the wilderness because it's unpleasant to our senses? Well, this is a great teaching from the interfaith tradition, a great teaching from my training at seminary. I've been to many religious settings that were extremely uncomfortable to me, even though I was drawn to them and I wanted to learn. There were things like the noise, the music, the language, the decor, the fact that I had to be naked to pray with them, witnessing intense sexism, really formal protocol, or even the food that I was given were very uncomfortable. I remember one time eating with a Native American spirit feast, and this woman in a trance with this buffalo blood ladled all this raw buffalo blood onto my food. And I, you know, that's not what I'm used to eating. And I ate it all. And they asked even the vegetarians to eat it. You know, that stand before gods who are strangers, whose language is harsh in your ears, and do not flinch. You know, if you're interested in overcoming the religious differences, you need to get used to being uncomfortable. Often, in the way that religion works, is we go to a church with like-minded people, and we basically affirm each other's beliefs. This is great, but it's quite tame, to be honest. And I think we need more than just that. Do you want to learn with people who already know what you're going to tell them? Or do you want to learn from somebody that has an utterly different belief? So have a conversation with somebody who believes in dragons. Or somebody who spent years learning Arabic so that they can recite the Quran. And when we encounter religious traditions that are very different than our own, remember the story of the Fox Lady. Be a good guest and don't ask them to take their innate being, their connection that's different from yours, and place it outside the house so you can be more comfortable. I was going to share my screen, but I think that's too much technology. I'm just going to bring this back to very basic psychology. All right, so there's a diagram. It's all over the internet, where there's the comfort zone, and then there's the growth zone. And then beyond that, they call it the anxiety zone. But when I lived in the Abbey, we called it the comfort zone, the growth zone, and the wilderness. And one of the teachings was that we actually need to go out into the wilderness sometimes. We can't just stay in the comfort zone, but we can't also just stay in that comfortable growth zone. We actually need to get out beyond our lives if we are to transcend our ego. So I'm going to end by saying this. God made humans in God's likeness. Do not return the favor.